Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Could a beet root a day keep the doctor at bay? Queensland University in Australia says, yeah. So I'll explain what beetroots do and why art is good for your heart. People who admire Renaissance paintings see stress hormone levels drop by 60% from University of Milan. Then we're going to talk about high blood pressure linked to vascular dementia from George Institute for Global Health and how caraway seeds can help in slimming, University of Malaysia. And also we're going to look at dietary fat intake, what it does to breast density. The wrong fat can create a predisposed breast that can cause cancer. We're also going to look at common artificial sweeteners, very poisonous to dogs, and the incredible health benefits of eating tamarind. Have you not had tamarind? It's in season now. It's a long, pod-like, brownish fruit. And you crack the skin, open it up, and then you have these threads that hold it in place, and it's real gooey, and it's got little seeds in it. But if you take your time and you scoop out the nice center of it, and you can put it into reductions, like a tamarind-lime reduction over potatoes, is delicious. Something you haven't tried. So we're going to have the latest on health and healing. And then our issues of the day are going to be twofold. First, I'm going to ask you about the war on drugs has failed. So why isn't it over already? I'll give you some input on that and then ask you for your input. And also, I'm going to throw out a few things that are happening in schools around the United States to very young kids, some as young as 5, being arrested, handcuffed, for doing just simple little things that kids do, just little pranks, or not even a prank, just doodling, get you slammed and handcuffed and arrested and perk walked out in front of all your fellow students. Why? And this is so wrong. Also, we had so many responses from people wanting to talk about our educational system that I thought about this. Why not simply send all of your emails of suggestions about the educational system, and I'll post them. I'll select all that I find that, you know, can be beneficial. We'll take the best of every single one and give your name, and if you're a teacher or not, or a parent, and then we can post these and then put this out there for people to use that as a starting place. Also today, I just want to show you what's wrong with the possibilities of gene editing. There's a Dr. Jennifer Kahn at a TED Talk, talked about what is called a CRISPR gene drive, allows scientists to change sequences of DNA and guarantee that the resulting edited genetic trait is inherited by future generations. That opens up the possibility of altering entire species forever. More than anything, the technology has led to the question, how will this new power affect humanity? What are we going to use to change it? And some people are going to play God. So we need to look at this, and we need to ask these hard questions, because this is being done in quiet rooms, board of directors, academics meeting together. Hey, we're willing to fund you. Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars if necessary. If you can guarantee us that we can get a new type of gene that can alter people, yeah. Well, but Scott, don't worry about the regulatory process. Don't worry about the media. We control them. So we're going to have that discussion today. Let's begin. We have so much to cover today. First up, we're going to look at beetroot. Now, beetroot is really beets because it's a root vegetable. And having a beet every day is really good for you. If you're an athlete, it is great because it provides more nitric oxide and that allows better flow of blood. It lessens the risk of stroke. It gives you greater endurance. That we know. But this is from Queensland University in Australia. And they've done a study and they found that beetroot is now considered the new superfood because it improves vascular health in people, let's say, over the age of 50, 60. And so anything that can improve vascular health, including blood coagulation, boosting your immune cells, that's going to allow you to live a longer life and be healthier in the process. Just drink a glass, not a lot, 8 ounces. That's a small glass. Quote from the study, beetroot juice, or just call it beet juice, is naturally rich in nitrate, and recent discoveries have shown the benefits of dietary nitrate in humans. Dietary nitrate elicits anti-inflammatory, anti-coagulative, anti-thrombotic effects, all of which are beneficial for good health of blood vessels. Our study is the first to investigate the immediate effect of beet juice on factors affecting vascular health, particularly blood clotting, the body's immune cell characteristics, blood pressure, inflammatory issues in mature age people. The research was very positive. So take your beets, have healthier blood vessels, have less inflammation, less chance of a heart attack or a stroke. This is from University of Milan. What they have found is that art has its admirers, and that contributes to culture, yes, but also they're now claiming that art also is beneficial for our physical and mental health, just experiencing it. And prior to entering the 18th century church, participants had their saliva tested for presence of stress hormone cortisol. And the volunteers, men and women, of different ages and with varying IQ levels, climbed 200 feet to the apex of the building as part of their two-hour experience, and the ascent including more than 200 steps, no less. And then following their tour of the building, which is famed for its cupolas, the world's largest, by the way, and the results seemed to substantiate the long-held belief that art, and that's what they were this massive art experience, has ameliorative effect, meaning it lowers your stress hormones. And how much? 60%. Quote, on average, we found that cortisol levels dropped by 60%. Previously, the health benefits of Renaissance art was dubbed the Stendhal syndrome, named after the 19th century French author Stendhal, who had a near religious experience when viewing art in Florence in 1817. And the latest results seem to substantiate the long-held belief that art can have this powerful effect. Quote, more than 90% of the participants said they felt much better at the end of the experience. So if you are fortunate enough to have a beautiful building, a one like in New York City, we have St. John the Divine, a glorious building, but we also have 150 plus museums. And one of the things I do after my show in New York is I'll take a walk. I call it the grazing walk. I'll take an apple or a red pepper, just a single piece of food, maybe a handful of grapes, and I walk over to a museum and just go in and just sit and appreciate some particular form of art and then walk back. That process of being in that environment, to participating in the energy exchange of the art and your moment, it energizes. But also now we're seeing it also lowers your cortisol level, which means you're de-stressed. So if you want to de-stress, get into some classical art. It didn't have the same effect with modern art, but classic art. And think of villages and communities in the Mediterranean area, in Spain and in Greece, France and Italy, Portugal, where you have magnificent cathedrals and where you have some of the greatest antiquity, and people live there. And you think, wow, this is really cool. You get to look out over the Mediterranean. You live in these 1,000-year-old or 500-year-old homes. You have this, all these beautiful landscapes. Needless to say, that de-stresses you. And anything that de-stresses you allows you to live a longer life. So we all live close to some museums, so appreciate them. Now, high blood pressure is now linked to vascular dementia. This is from the George Institute for Global Health. And they say that high blood pressure, which tens of millions of Americans have, could significantly raise the risk of developing the second most common form of dementia. And the medical records of more than 4 million people were analyzed, with researchers finding heightened blood pressure was associated with a 62% higher risk of vascular dementia between the ages of 30 and 50. Remember I said the other day, old age starts at 27? Well, this confirms that. And there was a study on vascular dementia rates, quote, are increasing all over the world and will pose a significant economic and social burden in both developed and developing countries. These results are particularly important. Quote, we already know that high blood pressure can raise the risk of stroke and heart attack. Our research has shown that high blood pressure is also associated with a significantly higher risk of vascular dementia. So, wow. Let's do all we can to keep our blood pressure down. And that's why using lemon juice and lime juice and pepper instead of salt can make a big difference. Caraway extract shows slimming potential. This is published in phytotherapy research. 90 days of supplementing with caraway extract led to significant reductions in waist circumference of 6.2 centimeters and thigh circumference 5.5, with nothing else changed. Just that. Quote, this study showed that the consumption of 30 milligrams, which is a small amount of caraway extract, may result in reasonable anti-obesity effects. And that's terrific. And also, University of Maryland School of Medicine, here's the bottom line to this. Consuming high amounts of saturated fat, there's your arachidonic acid from your hamburger, your hot dog, your meatloaf, your steak, your chicken, your pork chop. That ends up causing you to have a higher breast density, and that is a greater risk of breast cancer. This was published in the Journal of Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention, a journal of the American Association of Cancer Research. So here's the takeaway message for all the women in this audience and your daughters and granddaughters. Get off the meat. Go to a plant-based diet and you help prevent breast cancer. And that's good. The Food and Drug Administration is warning that a sweetener, artificial sweeteners out there, can be poisonous to dogs. So don't allow your dog to have artificial sweeteners, any artificial sweeteners. And finally, if you haven't heard of tamarind, TAMA, T-A-M-A, rind, R-I-N-D, it's a fruit. It's a fruit that grows in Asia, North Africa, also grows here in the United States. It's kind of a sweet sour, and they're used raw more often than not. It's very rich in nutrients. In fact, it has a lot of the B complex and iron and the phytochemicals. But here's some of the things that you could get going in your body if you have it. Now, let's just say you don't have tamarind, you don't see it in your markets. Okay, you can buy it. You can buy it in a little container. It's not expensive. And it lasts. Put it in the refrigerator, it lasts you a year. It helps you with your sore throat. It helps you with your heart. It's able to lower blood pressure. It has very high potassium and very high fiber. and it can reduce cholesterol in the body. It's a very powerful antioxidant. It helps with diabetes. It traditionally has been used, along with jamun and herbs for diabetic control. It improves bowel movements. It's a mild laxative. It soothes inflammation in your joints, in your bones, your cartilage, because of arthritis. It fights infections. It's as good as vitamin C in fighting infections. And it's high in vitamin C. And it's good for your immune system. And it's good to detoxify your kidneys. And it improves eye health. All that from just one simple fruit. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. For all of you all over the world, nice to have you with us today. We're going to be playing some audio clips in a moment. We're going to be taking an issue of what to do with the war on drugs. Let me just mention a few program announcements. This Sunday at 9 o'clock in Central Park at 5th Avenue, that's the entrance to the park, we'll be commencing our first of the year Natural Living Running and Walking Club meeting. It's free. Come prepared to sweat. Come prepared to work out. We're going to teach you. We'll have probably 15 to 20 of our coaches there. These are all people who've done the marathon in the past themselves, and we can get you in good shape. It's a lot of fun. Also, this Saturday, I'll be one of the keynote speakers for the March Against Monsanto in Fort Myers, and it's be there at noon. The march starts at 12:30, and we're going to be meeting in front of the Fresh Market near Daniels 41 intersection. We're going to march to Home Depot near Gladius Route 41 intersection. And there'll be other speakers. So here's the address. Write it down, please. 13499 South Cleveland Avenue, Fort Myers. So see you at noon. And I'm hopeful that people who live in Florida who listen to this program will show up. It's important to do this. And I look forward to also for all the people who can join the March Against Monsanto who live in the New York area to be at Union Square. Normally I'd be there, but I'm out of town, but I'll be back early Sunday morning. So I'll be back in New York at that time. And after a long time away and a long trip, but a lot accomplished, as you'll see when I get back, including sometime in the late summer, we're going to be having a premiere of my new film. Won't mention anything about the film, except it's really dynamite. We're trying to get it cut down. It's now 3.5 hours. I got to get down to an hour and a half or show a special edition of it. Now, here's what we're going to take on. A couple things. First, this is something that concerns me. Getting the militarization of our schools, getting the police in all of our schools. Yes, there are problems in some schools. Yes, there are people in those schools who are bringing that kind of gang activity in that should not be there, and that should be addressed. Bullying should be addressed. But that's a minority of the problems. What you have more often than not is you just have a zero tolerance principle. Let me give you examples of what happens when you have zero tolerance. A few months back, an 18-year-old who was enjoying his senior year at Rushville High School just did a senior prank. It was a harmless senior prank. He put a blow-up doll on a bathroom stall on the last day of school. Big deal. Well, they made it a big deal, and they arrested him, and now he faces up to 8 years in prison. 8 years in prison because they said that it was a criminal mischief, which is a Class C felony. Young people across America are being suspended, expelled, and charged with criminal offenses for behavior as innocuous as doodling on a desk or skipping class or just engaging in a senior prank. Suspension and expulsion, That's poles apart from arrests and criminal charges. When we were going to school, people engaged in pranks, but they were accepted for what they were. Worst was, you were reprimanded. In the case of violent or dangerous behavior, of course, everyone wants that stop. We want that person out of that school in that environment. But you don't penalize all the students for that. Let me give you an example of some of this tough-on-crime rhetoric that we're seeing. And it all started because of the 1994 Guns-Free School Act, and from there it evolved. And now, one 14-year-old used a plastic tube, a little tiny tube, you know, like that you would drink a straw from, and he blew a plastic pellet at a fellow student in his high school in lunch period. You know, just a stupid little prank, right? Harmless. Well, he was arrested, expelled from school for use of a weapon. The deputy sheriff came to the scene and charged him with 3 counts of misdemeanor assault. Why? Because the deputy sheriff said that the little straw, because it was used to project a little bead, was now considered a projectile weapon to use to intimidate, threaten, or harm. That was on his arrest report. And then you have a 9-year-old, a 4th grader in Staten Island, who was almost suspended when he brought his Legos to school to show his friends during lunch. And one of his little toys was a toy Lego policeman holding a little tiny 2-inch plastic gun. And he was thrown out because that little 2-inch plastic gun on a Lego policeman was considered a danger to the school. A 6-year-old got involved with a zero tolerance when he took his new Cub Scout camping utensil to school. I was a Boy Scout master. I was a Boy Scout for 10 years. There's nothing that I know that really helps a kid develop character as well as being in a good school, a scout camp, and taking the classes and learning about responsibility. And we all had these little devices. Well, his first grade, he's in first grade, by the way, his first grade teacher brought in the school officials, and they said, can't have that. Well, it was a fork and a spoon and a tiny little knife, and the knife was the kind that you would clean your fingernail with if you did that. It was that small. But they didn't care. Zero tolerance. And then there was a 14-year-old disabled student who someone said stole $2 from another student. Instead of finding the truth, the police were called in. He was strong-armed, arrested, and spent 6 weeks in jail. And for what? You had a 12-year-old Louisiana student diagnosed with hyperactivity disorder, suspended. Why? Because he was in food line and he said, don't eat all the potatoes or I'm going to get you. Just a harmless statement. The police came in and charged the boy with making, quote, a terrorist threat. And he was put in jail for 2 weeks awaiting trial. And then there was Chelsea, who simply wrote on her desk with her pencil, okay, O-K-A-Y, okay. Police came, handcuffed her, arrested her. She and 4 other school students were arrested, handcuffed, and paraded in front of their classmates before taking the police station in a police van and shackled to a pole. They were interrogated for hours because they had written something on their desk. And Alexa was punished for doodling. She had doodled, I love my friends, Abby and Faith. And she was arrested. She's a 7th grader. Perp walked out of the school in front of her classmates with her hands cupped behind her back, put into a police station, and handcuffed to a pole for 2 hours. But this is the one that gets me. A 5-year-old girl, 5 years old in St. Petersburg, Florida, kindergarten, was arrested, handcuffed, and shackled by police officers, then confined to a police cruiser for 3 hours. What was her crime? Did she have a weapon? What did she do? No, she had a little temper tantrum. She raised her voice, as sometimes, I'm sure at some point in world history, a 5-year-old has done. Thank goodness she had that temper tantrum, in St. Petersburg, Florida, instead of New York City, because there, I'm not sure the outcome. Here, you were just handcuffed, thrown in a police car. Wonder if how they interrogated her. Why didn't they bring in a SWAT team for that one? Oh, and they did bring in a SWAT team. But that had nothing to do with schools. That had to do with, what, was he 96 years old? And he was in bed, and he was in an assisted living center, and he was having some abdominal pain and chest pain. And so they wanted him to go to the hospital. He didn't want to, and he thought it'd be all right. And so they called the police, and the police came. A bunch of police came, and of course they always come with a lot and guns. And they told him to go to the hospital, and he refused. So they shot him and killed him in his bed. And then while he was bleeding to death, they handcuffed him. Of course, this is Chicago, so nothing surprises me. And he died. No one was held accountable, nor are most held accountable. So this is what we get when we militarize everything, and especially our schools. Isn't it time we took back our schools and got rid of the administrators and the corruption of the bureaucracy and let authentic teaching begin again? Or do we have to start from scratch? Because something is terribly wrong when these are just random samples of what happens every day across America. Your thoughts? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, here's another issue that is not being addressed: the war on drugs. We have spent hundreds of billions of dollars on the war on drugs. In fact, over the last 44 years, had we taken the money we had spent on the war on drugs and put it back into communities and allow those communities to be revived and give people their meaningful work at a living wage, then we wouldn't have all those people wanting drugs to begin with to cover their pain. So we criminalized it. Who benefits today? Well, police benefit, the people who supply, the prison system benefit. The people who make money off the war on drugs benefit, and they're the ones who spend hundreds of millions of dollars in lobbying to make sure that we keep really dangerous pot smokers in jail for a long time. It's just rank hypocrisy. Your thoughts on the war on drugs? I believe that we should abolish all laws on drugs. I believe we should legalize all drugs. I believe that we should put health clinics, behavioral clinics, and rehab clinics in every community in America to help people. You're going to get rid of all the profit and motive, and therefore all these narco gangs all over the world will no longer have the opportunity to get massively rich and kill hundreds of thousands of people, over 120,000 missing or dead in Mexico alone since their war on drugs. And then you could stop that whole mass of stupidity and put that money to where it could be used, helping individuals with their health and psychological and behavioral needs. Just again, you should let everyone out of prison who is there because of narcotics. If they've committed violent crimes, that's a separate issue for which they should be held accountable. If it's a nonviolent crime, you should expunge their record and let them reenter society and have teachers and others, vocational people who can help them rehabilitate them so they can become a gainful member of society again. It's just my suggestion. What's yours? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, before you start calling in on these, I want to play you something that I consider really serious. And it's right now it's happening. It's not the future. And that's gene editing. You're going to hear now from Jennifer Kahn from a TED talk of how far they've gone. I'll only play part of it. And then understand that the New York Times ran a piece about how they're meeting at Harvard with about 150 people to get going on a human genome, which means that they go from insects to humans. And that means they could create their idea of a perfect human. Well, what would the military do with it? Let me see. They'd want nice, passive people, right? That's the kind of person they would want in their laboratories. And what about all the narcissists, the sociopaths, the hedge fund owners, the equity partnerships, and the people that enable them? They'd want benevolent people who would find a better way to distribute their and invest in communities and people without just profit and greed being their motive. They'd want to change it, right? Yeah? And politicians who would want real democracy and get rid of all campaign cut. I could just see all the wonderful things that the people in power would want to do if they had the power to change genes. I want your thoughts after you listen to this.
So this is a talk about gene drives. I'm going to start by telling you a brief story. 20 years ago, a biologist named Anthony James got obsessed with the idea of making mosquitoes that didn't transmit malaria. It was a great idea and pretty much a complete failure. For one thing, it turned out to be really hard to make a malaria-resistant mosquito. James managed it finally just a few years ago by adding some genes that make it impossible for the malaria parasite to survive inside the mosquito. But that just created another problem. Now that you've got a malaria-resistant mosquito, how do you get it to replace all the malaria-carrying mosquitoes? There were a couple options, but plan A was basically to breed up a bunch of the new genetically engineered mosquitoes, release them into the wild, and hope that they pass on their genes. The problem was that you'd have to release literally 10 times the number of native mosquitoes for that to work. So in a village with 10,000 mosquitoes, you'd release an extra 100,000. As you might guess, this was not a very popular strategy with the villagers. Then, last January, Anthony James got an email from a biologist named Ethan Beer. Beer said that he and his grad student, Valentino Gantz, had stumbled on a tool that could not only guarantee that a particular genetic trait would be inherited, but that would spread incredibly quickly. If they were right, it would basically solve the problem that James had been working on for 20 years. As a test, they engineered two mosquitoes to carry the anti-malaria gene, and also this new tool, a gene drive, which I'll explain in a minute. Finally, they set it up so that any mosquitoes that inherited the anti-malaria gene wouldn't have the usual white eyes, but would instead have red eyes. That was pretty much just for convenience, so they could tell at a glance which was which. So they took their two anti-malarial red-eyed mosquitoes, put them in a box with 30 ordinary white-eyed ones, and let them breed. In two generations, those had produced 3,800 grandchildren. That is not the surprising part. This is the surprising part. Given that you started with just two red-eyed mosquitoes and 30 white-eyed ones, you'd expect mostly white-eyed descendants. Instead, when James opened the box, all 3,800 mosquitoes had red eyes. When I asked Ethan Beer about this moment, he became so excited that he was literally shouting into the phone. That's because getting only red-eyed mosquitoes violates a rule that is the absolute cornerstone of biology, Mendelian genetics. I'll keep this quick, but Mendelian genetics says that when a male and female mate, their baby inherits half of its DNA from each parent. So if our original mosquito was AA and our new mosquito was AB, where B is the anti-malaria gene, the baby should come out in four permutations: AA, AB, AA, BA. Instead, with a new gene drive, they all came out AB. Biologically, that shouldn't even be possible. So what happened? The first thing that happened was the arrival of a gene editing tool known as CRISPR in 2012. Many of you have probably heard about CRISPR, so I'll just say briefly that CRISPR is a tool that allows researchers to edit genes very precisely and easily and quickly. It does this by harnessing a mechanism that already existed in bacteria. Basically, there's a protein that acts like a scissors and cuts the DNA, and there's an RNA molecule that directs the scissors to any point on the genome you want. The result is basically a word processor for genes. You can take an entire gene out, put one in, or even edit just a single letter within a gene. And you can do it in nearly any species. Okay, remember how I said that gene drives originally had two problems? The first was that it was hard to engineer a mosquito to be malaria resistant. That's basically gone now, thanks to CRISPR. But the other problem was logistical. How do you get your trait to spread? This is where it gets clever. A couple years ago, a biologist at Harvard named Kevin Esfeldt wondered what would happen if you made it so that CRISPR inserted not only your new gene, but also the machinery that does the cutting and pasting. In other words, what if CRISPR also copied and pasted itself? You'd end up with a perpetual motion machine for gene editing. And that's exactly what happened. This CRISPR gene drive that Esfeld created not only guarantees that a trait will get passed on, but if it's used in the germline cells, it will automatically copy and paste your new gene into both chromosomes of every single individual. It's like a global search and replace. Or in science terms, it makes a heterozygous trait homozygous. So, what does this mean? For one thing, it means that we have a very powerful, but also somewhat alarming, new tool. Up until now, the fact that gene drives didn't work very well was actually kind of a relief. Normally, when we mess around with an organism's genes, we make that thing less evolutionarily fit. So biologists can make all the mutant fruit flies they want without worrying about it. If some escape, natural selection just takes care of them. What's remarkable and powerful and frightening about gene drives is that that will no longer be true. Assuming that your trait does not have a big evolutionary handicap, like a mosquito that can't fly, the CRISPR-based gene drive will spread the change relentlessly until it's in every single individual in the population. Now, it isn't easy to make a gene drive that works that well, but James and Esfeld think that we can. The good news is that this opens the door to some remarkable things. If you put an anti-malarial gene drive in just 1% of Anopheles mosquitoes, the species that transmits malaria, researchers estimate that it would spread to the entire population in a year. So in a year, you could virtually eliminate malaria. In practice, we're still a few years out from being able to do that, but still, 1,000 children a day die of malaria. In a year, that number could be almost zero. The same goes for dengue fever, chikungunya, yellow fever. And it gets better. Say you want to get rid of an invasive species, like get Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. All you have to do is release a gene drive that makes the fish produce only male offspring. In a few generations, there'll be no females left, no more carp. In theory, this means we could restore hundreds of native species that have been pushed to the brink. Okay, that's the good news. This is the bad news. Gene drives are so effective that even an accidental release could change an entire species, and often very quickly. Anthony James took good precautions. He bred his mosquitoes in a biocontainment lab, and he also used a species that's not native to the US, so that even if some did escape, they'd just die off. There'd be nothing for them to mate with. But it's also true that if a dozen Asian carp with the all-male gene drive accidentally got carried from the Great Lakes back to Asia, they could potentially wipe out the native Asian carp population. And that's not so unlikely, given how connected our world is. In fact, it's why we have an invasive species problem. And that's fish. Things like mosquitoes and fruit flies, there's literally no way to contain them. They cross borders and oceans all the time. Okay, the other piece of bad news is that a gene drive might not stay confined to what we call the target species. That's because of gene flow, which is basically a fancy way of saying that neighboring species sometimes interbreed. If that happens, it's possible a gene drive could cross over, like Asian carp could infect some other kind of carp. That's not so bad if your drive just promotes a trait, like eye color. In fact, there's a decent chance that we'll see a wave of very weird fruit flies in the near future. But it could be a disaster if your drive is designed to eliminate the species entirely. The last worrisome thing is that the technology to do this, to genetically engineer an organism and include a gene drive, is something that basically any lab in the world can do. An undergraduate can do it. A talented high schooler with some equipment can do it. Now, I'm guessing that this sounds terrifying.
Okay. There you have Jennifer Kahn talking about gene editing, and you heard her say that once that's available, a high schooler, college student can do it. Now take a look at the consequences of gene research on genetically modified animals. Look at all of the frankenfoods that we have. Look at the studies by Dr. Seralini and his team that show that feeding rats genetically modified food for their entire life caused massive renal problems and cancers. And because the industry only did studies to 3 months, we never knew these problems exist because it only existed after 3 months. Well, is it possible that they didn't know? No, I don't believe that for a second. It's my belief that they've known for a long time, the problems with genetic engineering. And that's with animals or with food. Now you get into a human being. Let's say you genetically engineer a person and they kiss another person. What is in their saliva? How do we know that the genes in their saliva would not go into the genes of another person and cause changes in that person's DNA? It's called jumping genes. It's entirely feasible. So we're dealing with an extraordinarily dangerous as well as ethical issue here. We know that the people who have the power and the money to cause genetic changes are going to want something that is extreme, is what their intentions are. So we could imagine what that would do to everyone else that doesn't have that gene quality. Just imagine how many people cheat in athletics. Now, I'm a competitive athlete, and I've seen athletes that I knew were cheating. And in time, they were weeded out, meaning they just stopped, they were caught. But even right now, the Russian team, many of the people and many American Olympians have been caught cheating. Look at Lance Armstrong, serial cheater, and everyone around him cheating, or at least most of the people around him cheating. And think of all the football players and baseball players, anything for an advantage. Now imagine with this type, you don't have to take a drug. You can have your genes altered so you could have massive strength or massive quality over anyone else. Now, with as much greed and self-interest as we now have in the human condition, could you just imagine the consequences to this? I'd like your thoughts on this, please. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And if you believe it can happen, well, then you got to look at the world that we live in today. Could you ever believe that a five-year-old would be arrested and handcuffed because they got angry? Could you believe that a young girl would have her head slammed against a wall because she had narcolepsy and had fallen asleep in a hallway? And this was a police officer just slammed her head into a lockers and hurt her. Yeah, it's happening now. Could you believe asset forfeiture? Could anyone listening right now believe that $3 to $4 billion a year are being stolen, out and out theft, by local police when they stop you and ask you how much cash you have to give it to them, and then they say that, well, we believe it has something to do with narcotics, and nothing happens to them? Could you believe that we would ever get to a point where the President of the United States would have so much power that he could cause a person to be arrested, have no defense, indefinite detention, or kill them and have no responsibility legally for it? Could you believe that we'd ever get to a point where every single communication we have has been monitored for over a decade? Well, it happens now. I just thought about this. About 10 days ago, there began a major raging wildfire in Canada near a tar sands town. More than 90,000 people had to be immediately evacuated from Fort McMurray in Alberta. And quickly, that fire doubled. Then it went into a different direction. Then this past weekend, it came back in that direction. It's now called apocalyptic. And imagine all those people the day before the fire being told, you might have a fire that would burn down your homes by the thousands and cause every single person in the area have to be evacuated. They say, that's nonsense. It's never happened. And indeed, they were right. Never did. How many of them had prepared for that? Probably no one. And that's what we face. We don't think it'll happen until it does, and then those who are empowered to make it happen always control the outcome. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Well, one of the reasons there are many for the war on drugs was that it supplied the prisons for profit with nonviolent labor, America's answer to third world labor, which supplied many American corporations with cheap labor. But now that the war on drugs is winding down, they've turned to taking food stamps away from what they call able-bodied individuals with no dependents. And, of course, when people don't have food, they will turn to crime, prostitution, street crime, which puts us all in harm's way. And at the same time, America in 2015 exported approximately $140 billion in food and agricultural products to other nations. So this is to resupply the prisons for profit and keep that American form of slavery going.
I appreciate that call and that response, Harvey. Thank you very much. And I would certainly concur with that. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a brief break. Come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us to everyone. I'm Gary Noll. I want to share with you an audio clip to show you how much power corporations have over our lives. Please listen in.
Show you what's behind this closed door. A place where legislators and corporate lobbyists have an equal vote. A place they don't want you to see.
You need to be credentialed at registration.
We are credentialed. We are Georgia. We're Georgia Media. Are there legislators in there? Are there legislators in there? We are Georgia credential
media. Over here? Please step over here.
What? There's Georgia legislators here. Are laws being made in there?
This isn't the state capitol. It's a resort hotel in Savannah where lawmakers are wined and dined as members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC.
What is ALEC?
It's really a corporate bill mill. I mean, they're cranking out legislation, putting it in the hands of legislators who go back and file it.
Georgia Senator Nan Orrick would know. She was once an ALEC member.
What happens in these back rooms?
There are votes taken that have the corporate folks at the same table voting with the legislators on what bills to pick. And that at its core just screams out inappropriate.
You're telling me that in these rooms, a corporation has an equal vote with a legislator on a piece of legislation?
They absolutely vote, and the truth be told, they write the bills.
ALEC bills come complete with blanks where legislators need only fill in their state name, like the Asbestos Claims Priorities Act. This Georgia law that now prevents many asbestos victims from suing corporations matches the ALEC bill clause after clause, often word for word. The final vote was taken here at the Georgia Capitol, but the bill was first approved here. Inside a Las Vegas casino at a closed-door ALEC meeting. Records show the three Georgia senators who sponsored the bill received more than $22,000 in ALEC scholarships to attend resort meetings the year before, during, and after the asbestos law was passed.
This is money from corporations to legislators, but it's being filtered through ALEC, and they get a tax write-off?
Well, ALEC is a 501c3 organization, charitable educational purposes.
That's right. ALEC is an educational charity. The signature of Georgia's Speaker of the House, David Ralston, appears on this 2013 ALEC fundraising letter. He writes, "Your support of the scholarship fund is critical, enabling Georgia legislators to attend the annual meetings. Donations are 100% tax deductible and fund education efforts for legislators." Who's doing the educating? Inside that closed-door committee room in Savannah we couldn't show you, we saw the lobbyist for the cell phone industry seated across from Georgia State Rep. Ben Harbin right before we were pulled out.
Here we're credentialed to observe legislators here in Georgia, wherever they meet, to discuss laws. He's calling for backup.
Alex staffers had four off-duty sheriff's deputies standing by while we talked with the group's director of communications.
Can we do an interview with you?
Actually, no.
Why not?
If you please turn the camera
off. No, we can't turn the camera off. We, you know, that's one thing we don't do.
Okay, well then I'd like to have you escorted out of the building, please.
Okay, I'm a guest of this hotel. I'm actually staying here at this hotel.
You are staying at this
hotel. So here's the question is, if Georgia legislators are meeting here, we're credentialed right here to see Georgia legislators making laws. Are they discussing things that could become law here?
Georgia legislators are here participating in discussions where they're learning from legislators from others.
So why can't the people who elected them see the process?
This is a private meeting.
A private meeting paid for by whom?
By our members and donors.
Our lobbyists, correct?
No.
Are you here for this conference, too?
Are you really?
We met two lobbyists and a state representative from New England in the hotel bar the night before and recorded our conversation.
You have to pay your own way?
Well, on a trip like this, absolutely. And that's where you would come in, man. On a trip like this, I'm the state chair of Alabama.
Yeah.
And I look for financial supporters,
right.
Lobbyists, people like, you know, send us like a couple thousand bucks every so often. That gives me money to help those folks with. Now, the other hand,
we pay more to be here, so it helps support them.
And you do, you do.
I see. So the lobbyist fees to come to the event actually help subsidize the legislator coming here.
Our lobbyists, correct?
No.
They're not lobbyists? The ones that we recorded in the bar last night aren't lobbyists who are here members?
He signals to the sheriff's deputies.
All right, I'm a guest of the hotel,
not
sir.
Not for long.
I'm here, okay. But paying guest of this hotel, sir.
We'll take care of that.
Okay. Escort you up to your room and get your things.
Did we violate some law or something? I mean, are we violating a law here? Don't say nothing. One of the Georgia senators who sponsored that asbestos bill, Renee Unterman, told the 11 Alive investigators she later dropped out of ALEC, calling it a group of angry white men controlled by industry, not legislators. Major corporations like Atlanta-based Coca-Cola have also dropped out of ALEC.
Wow, eye-opening to say the least. Do lawmakers have to report payments for travel to these kinds of resort meetings?
You would think, Brenda, but in Georgia, the answer is no. We filed half a dozen open records requests with Georgia legislators, including the Speaker of the House asking for receipts and reimbursements to ALEC events. Well, today, we received this letter from their lawyer. Your request is denied. Quote, the General Assembly is not subject to the Georgia Open Records Law. Huh. In other words, lawmakers specifically exempted themselves from a law they passed to make Georgia government more transparent.
It's a good thing you made it out there. Those armed guards were standing for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, wow. This is just baffling.
We'll stay on.
And we wouldn't know it had it not been for this report.
No.
All right, Brendan, thank you.
Mind blowing. Thank you.
I've been talking about Alex for more than 15 years, but really picked up the pace after it became more public. I first realized that we were up against a hidden force, but I didn't know who they were, over 25 years ago when there was an effort in New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut to make it a law that only a registered dietitian could offer advice for free or even a fee. You had to be a registered dietitian. And if you were a PhD, like I'm a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, and I have postdoctoral fellowship at the Institute of Pi Biology, I'm a research scientist, but I would not have qualified had it not been for the fact that I was also a registered dietitian. So think of all the good people with outstanding backgrounds academically, but who were not registered dietitian, and as a result couldn't offer that information. And yet, in every one of the cases, we kept seeing the same identical language used, the same bills proposed. Now, you know that all these state legislators are not meeting on a regular basis with other state legislators, especially one in New Mexico and one in New Jersey. So someone else was. And there's where ALEC comes in. ALEC represents more than 250 corporations. They go to your state legislators a couple times a year. They wine and dine them, and they give them new rules of engagement. Here's a bill. We wrote the bill. It protects our industry, and it denies the citizens of a state, New York, New Jersey, the right to know that we wrote this bill. You'll get the credit for writing, for passing this bill into law in your state. And they generally have a group of people, so they almost always get them passed. We should ask every single legislator that has ever passed a law that was given to them as a bill by Alex to resign. We should ban Alec from having any lobbying. But then again, you start looking at how polluted, how corrupt, how vile all state legislative processes and most of the legislators are. New York and New Jersey are not exempt. They're at the top of the list. So the laws being passed, they're industry laws, not for the consumer. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on the next program. Have a nice day.